Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
In the search for solutions, we must not make the problem worse. It is vital to stay true to the bedrock of international law. It is essential to avoid any form of ethnic cleansing.
The UN Secretary General and other world leaders have condemned President Trump's call for the United States to take over Gaza and displace the entire Palestinian population. We'll speak to the Palestinian-American analyst Omar Badar, and then Peter Beinart, author of the new book, Being Jewish After the Destruction of Gaza, A Reckoning.
When I look at what's happened to Gaza, where a state that speaks in the name of the Jewish people, using American weapons with the support of the organized American Jewish community, has destroyed an entire society, and now elements of that American Jewish community are supporting the American president in a call for mass ethnic cleansing, it seems to me that something has gone fundamentally wrong in Jewish public discourse.
Then, as protests continue across the United States over President Trump and Elon Musk's attempts to dismantle the federal government, we'll look at the administration's attacks on the Department of Education.
Let's call President Trump's plan to abolish the Department of Education exactly what it is, an extremist power grab to dismantle public schools and enforce ideological conformity.
We'll speak to Seattle educator Jesse Hagopian, author of Teach Truth, The Struggle for Anti-Racist Education. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Protests took place in states across the United States Wednesday as President Trump, Elon Musk, and their associates intensified their attempts to dismantle a fast-growing number of government agencies. Thousands rallied on Capitol Hill to demand Congress protect federal agencies. This is Francisco Bencosme, former China policy lead at USAID.
Let's be clear, they're dismantling USAID. They shut down the doors. They brought down banners. They put thousands and thousands of people on leave. This is not a reform. This is an attack. And USAID is just the beginning. It's USAID Now, it's the Department of Education next, and it's an attack on our entire democratic government system.
Wired reports, employees of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, have received orders to pause all international engagements amidst concerns the scientific agency could also soon face mass firings and have its mission throttled, including its work on developing wind energy. Meanwhile, workers of color at the Health and Human Services Department fear they could be directly targeted after their names and photos were published on a website called DEI Watch List, created by the American Accountability Foundation. The list of workers' claims their so-called offenses include working on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and using pronouns in their bios. Democratic Congress members Judy Chu and Gwen Moore confronted House Speaker Mike Johnson Wednesday, showing up at his office during his meeting with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to demand answers on Elon Musk's team gaining access to the Treasury Department's payment system. The lawmakers say Johnson hid Scott Bessent from them. In the Senate, Hawaii Democrat Brian Schatz led an overnight filibuster against the confirmation of Project 2025 architect Russell Vogt to head the Office of Management and Budget.
All of us, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, the media, which is so damn casual about what is happening, we have to understand that when you're in the middle of the fight, you're not sure if this is a historic moment. When you read about it, In the past, you can identify that historic moment. When you observe it in a faraway place with a hard-to-pronounce name, you can identify what's happening, creeping fascism.
A coalition of labor groups filed a lawsuit Wednesday to prevent Doge, Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, from attempting to take over the Labor Department and gaining access to its data. The agency holds sensitive data, likely including worker complaints against Musk and his companies. The plaintiffs include the AFL-CIO, that's the American Federation of Government Employees as well, Service Employees International Union, and the Economic Policy Institute. Labor Department workers rallied in D.C. Wednesday against an expected incursion by Elon Musk, joined by Democratic lawmakers. This is Michigan Congressmember Rashida Tlaib.
We don't get the benefits and the support and the protections, but for the fact that workers organized and they pushed back and they fought. And when we don't get it, we shut it down.
Yeah!
We don't get it.
Shut it down.
We don't get it.
Shut it down.
In more labor news, a former board member of the National Labor Relations Board, Gwen Wilcox, filed a lawsuit calling her firing by President Trump last month unprecedented and illegal, asking a federal court to reinstate her. NLRB members are Senate approved to fixed terms and can only be removed for, quote, neglect of duty or malfeasance, unquote. The CIA sent the White House an unclassified email with the first names and last name initials of workers hired in the past 2 years in response to an order by the Trump administration as it moves to drastically whittle down the federal workforce. Former CIA officials called the move a counterintelligence disaster, warning that the employees could easily be identified. Meanwhile, acting Deputy Attorney General Emil Bove, Trump's lawyer in his New York criminal election interference case, accused FBI leadership of insubordination after it refused to identify a core team of agents involved in the January 6th Capitol insurrection investigations. The Justice Department seeking data on over 5,000 FBI employees involved in those investigations. President Trump Wednesday signed an executive order to bar transgender students from school sports. The so-called Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports Order directs federal agencies to withhold funding for schools that do not comply. This came as at least 15 attorneys general from Democratic-led states issued a joint statement vowing to protect gender-affirming care, calling Trump's order to rescind federal funding for the life-saving treatments, quote, wrong on the science and the law, unquote. Meanwhile, a federal judge in Washington, D.C. Tuesday temporarily blocked Trump's order that sought to move transgender women in federal prisons to men's wards and end their gender-affirming care. The three transgender prisoners who filed the lawsuit successfully argued the anti-trans order violates the Eighth Amendment's prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. A federal judge in Maryland has ordered a nationwide indefinite hold on President Trump's executive order blocking birthright citizenship. U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman, a Biden nominee, ruled Wednesday that civil rights groups suing to stop Trump's order were very likely to succeed in their argument that it, quote, conflicts with the plain language of the 14th Amendment, unquote. In Texas, an agreement between state officials and the Trump administration will allow soldiers in the Texas National Guard to make immigration arrests at the border and help ICE detain and deport undocumented people. This comes as the Trump administration continues its campaign of mass deportations with more than 8,000 immigration arrests since January 20th. In Colorado, heavily armed ICE agents carried out large-scale immigration raids at apartment complexes across Denver and Aurora Wednesday. The Denver Post reports masked agents knocked on doors, demanding residents show IDs, asking them to report any undocumented neighbors. Those arrested had their hands zip-tied and were loaded onto waiting buses. Amidst the raids, thousands of protesters gathered in front of the Colorado State Capitol to denounce ICE temporarily shutting down major roadways in Denver. Similar large-scale protests erupted in Philadelphia, in Nashville, Tennessee, in Lansing, Michigan, St. Paul, Minnesota, and across the country. There were also student-led walkouts in solidarity with immigrants at high schools in Los Angeles and San Antonio, Texas. The United States has begun deportation flights to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, after President Trump ordered the military to prepare to receive up to 30,000 people there. On Tuesday, Customs and Border Protection said the first 10 immigration prisoners were flown from Fort Bliss, Texas, to the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo, where officials say they'll be housed in tents surrounded by fencing and armed guards. Refugees International condemned the plan as gratuitously cruel, illegal, expensive, and burdensome, adding, quote, setting up an American gulag in the Caribbean in response to forced displacement in the Americas is a shameful low in U.S. history, unquote. Guatemala's president has agreed to receive asylum seekers from other countries who are being deported from the United States following a pressure campaign from the Trump administration. President Bernardo Arevalo announced the deal Wednesday after talks with U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio in Guatemala City, saying he'd agreed to receive 40% more deportation flights from the United States. Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, ordered his army to prepare a plan for the, quote, voluntary departure, unquote, of residents from Gaza following Trump's proposal to unlawfully take over the Gaza Strip and ethnically cleanse the Palestinian territory. Katz also falsely claimed countries which spoke out against Israel's war crimes in Gaza, including Spain, Ireland, and Norway, are, quote, legally obligated to allow any Gaza resident to enter their territories, unquote. Palestinians in Gaza have forcefully rejected any efforts to force them into exile. This is displaced Gaza resident Hassan Ashour speaking from Rafah.
We want to tell the Israeli defense minister that we are steadfast in Gaza. Despite the siege and despite everything, we are steadfast. God willing, we will not leave our country.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres responded Wednesday to President Trump's remarks at a session of the UN Committee on the exercise of the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people.
In the search for solutions, we must not make the problem worse. It is vital to stay true to the bedrock of international law. It is essential to avoid any form of ethnic cleansing.
Also on Wednesday, Israel announced it would no longer participate in the UN Human Rights Council, one day after Trump announced the U.S. would withdraw from the UN body. Vigils are being held around Sweden as more details emerge about Tuesday's mass shooting in a continuing education school in the city of Örebro, which killed 11 people, including the shooter, in the worst mass shooting in Swedish history. The suspect reportedly changed into military gear in the school bathroom before carrying out his attack. The targeted school served a large immigrant population and offered Swedish language classes. This is a nursing student and survivor of the shooting.
So how are we instrument?
There were two consecutive bangs, and then they increased in frequency, and then we understood that it was a shooting. I thought that this was my last time, my last day, that I'm getting shot today, but I don't know when.
The Panama Canal Authority has denied the Trump administration's sudden claim that U.S. vessels would be able to cross the waterway, quote, without charge fees, saving the U.S. government millions of dollars a year, unquote. Panama's government said Wednesday no such adjustment had been made. Trump has repeatedly threatened to retake the Panama Canal, claiming it's being operated by China. Argentina's far-right populist president, Javier Milei, says he's withdrawing Argentina from the World Health Organization, following in the footsteps of President Trump. Like Trump, Milei cited the UN agency's response to the COVID pandemic, namely its backing off of life-saving lockdowns. Last month, Milei gave a speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos, blasting feminism, LGBTQ communities, the fight against climate change, social welfare, and so-called wokeism. Mass demonstrations took place in Argentina following up protesters called Milei's hate speech. Ecuador's president, Daniel Noboa, has announced a series of major policy changes that also appear to echo Trump just days ahead of general election Sunday. These include a 27% tariff on Mexican imports and a plan to immediately militarize Ecuador's ports of entry, including temporarily sealing the border. Noboa is up against leftist Luis Gonzalez of the Citizen Revolution Movement. Gonzalez is a protege of former President Rafael Correa, who's vowed to increase social spending and crack down on crime. Both the Argentine President Milei and the Ecuadorian President Noboa attended President Trump's inauguration. And California officials have accused President Trump of wasting billions of gallons of water after he ordered the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to open two dams in central California. Over the weekend, Trump declared on social media the water's flowing in California and claimed it was, quote, heading to farmers throughout the state and to Los Angeles. Neither claim is accurate. None of the 2.2 billion gallons discharged into the dry lake bed of Tulare Lake will flow to Los Angeles to help with wildfires, which have already been contained. Meanwhile, the water was released ahead of the dry summer months when it's most needed and before most farmers have been even planted their fields. Southern and Central California and Nevada are experiencing record or near record dryness. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Fallout continues to grow over President Trump's proposal for the United States to take over Gaza and displace the entire Palestinian population in order to turn Gaza into what he called, quote, the Riviera of the Middle East. Trump made the shocking announcement at the White House Tuesday while meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Trump administration has since tried to walk back some of the president's comments. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Palestinians would only be temporarily removed from Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, has ordered the Israeli army to create a plan for what he calls the, quote, voluntary departure of Palestinians from Gaza. On Wednesday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned against any call for the ethnic cleansing of the territory. Palestinians have widely condemned Trump's proposal. This is Qasim Abu Hassoun, a displaced Palestinian living in Rafah.
No matter what the Israeli defense minister says about the displacement of the people of the Gaza Strip, this is not possible. This is our country, our land. We will hang on to it until the last moment. We've been waiting for a year and a half, just like the baby waits for food and water. We've waited for the ceasefire to start to come back to our homes, despite that we don't have houses or homes anymore. So we got displaced to the rubble, and we built tents and stayed.
We're joined now by Palestinian-American political analyst Omar Bedard. He's a member of the National Policy Council of the Arab American Institute. Omar, thanks so much for being with us. Respond to what President Trump laid out and Netanyahu underscored as they stood at a joint news conference in Washington, D.C. He talked about the Gaza being rebuilt by the United States as a Riviera on the Mediterranean, and again is pushing Arab countries to accept the Palestinian population. He said America would own Gaza.
You know, Amy, everything Trump says and does is a little bit extreme, but the lunacy of this particular proposal is really in a class of its own. Now, we've heard a lot of comments from Washington of politicians who glibly say racist things like flatten Gaza and turn it into a parking lot or whatever else. But what Trump has done different is that he's put this forward as a serious proposal, essentially making it official U.S. policy, the destruction of Palestinian society, the scattering of Palestinians to neighboring countries. And on top of that, for the U.S. to just come and take Palestinian territory over and make it part of the United States. I mean, this is just, it's difficult to find the words to really describe how absurd that is. But the most despicable part of it is that it was framed as concern for Palestinians. That's why we're doing this at a time when he's standing directly across the podium from another man who's smirking, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court because he is responsible for the destruction of Gaza and the devastation of a civilian population, the slaughtering of tens of thousands of children and making it unlivable. All you would need in this case is for the U.S. to tell Netanyahu to stop destroying Gaza and allow it to be rebuilt so that Palestinians can live there as a free people in their own country. And yet that seems to be not on the table because Trump does not see Palestinians as human beings. He thinks they can be moved around like cattle. And that's where this insane pronouncement actually comes from. And the fact that Netanyahu sitting there with glee in his face, you could see it. The dream of the right wing in Israel for a very long time has been to drive Palestinians completely out of the area so that Israel can just expand and take over all over that territory. It's difficult to imagine that we'd be living in a moment in which the president of the United States is openly advocating that position and facilitating one of the worst crimes that we would have ever seen in history if Israel is allowed to complete it.
So, Omar, what do you think the impact of these statements will be? One of the other things that Trump said is that he's discussed this plan with leaders in the region and they all, quote, love it. So if you could say, what do you think the impact will be and how have leaders in the region actually responded?
Yeah, Trump is basically lying. I mean, there's nobody who lies more than he breathes, probably, than Trump does. And everybody in the region actually wants an end to this absolute horror show that has been put on for the past 15 months of Israel's genocide in Gaza. And they want a way to defuse the situation. And instead, Trump is proposing to exacerbate it, make it worse, and to also impose a refugee crisis on neighboring countries. All of it, nobody wants this, with the exception of Israel and some of Trump's, you know, high dollar donors who are pushing for this idea that Israel should control the land from the river to the sea. That's who wants this plan. And there's no question that even though the entire region would absolutely reject it, what I'm worried about, because there's been a lot of commentary of course, he's just bluffing. You know, he would never send the U.S. military to try to do that. I think all of that is true. But if all Trump does is simply allow Netanyahu to continue what he's been doing for the past 15 months indefinitely, you know, Gaza is already unlivable. There is no infrastructure. There is no clean water. And if you prevent it from being rebuilt and allow Netanyahu to just continue treating it as a killing field, just this concentration camp with millions of people in it being devastated over and over again, the fundamental reality is that we are heading to the complete destruction of Palestinian society in Gaza as a matter of status quo. And the world really has a choice to make right now of whether we have to stand up collectively and say that never again meant something. And this is absolutely the time to stand up and say this has to come to an end, or whether we're just going to sit there and watch as Netanyahu continues decimating that concentration camp endlessly in the hopes that we can eventually get Palestinians either to die or to leave.
Omar Badar, it's clear the U.S. is pushing very hard, especially Jordan and Egypt. I mean, you have the president has just invited the king of Jordan to the White House within the next few weeks, and the State Department announcing it's approved a potential foreign military sale to Egypt for the acquisition of what's called ANTPS-78 long-range radar systems. It's more than $300 million worth of weapons in that system alone.
Yeah, there is. Trump continues to be under the impression that you can buy people. And there are some things in which you can't just buy people. You can bribe your way however you want. But the question of Palestine is one, it's the lens through which the entire Arab world views international relations. The entire region understands that there is a very, very deep grievance in the fact that Palestinians have not been allowed to be a free people in their own country, and the fact that Israel's atrocities and occupation and apartheid and just the endless list of crimes that has been imposed on them, that is live streamed on people's phones and computers throughout the entire region, is a source of deep resentment. People are furious watching all of this, and I don't think that any amount of money is going to convince these governments to, say, risk being in complete disalignment with your people. I mean, let's be serious. Those are not particularly democratic regimes, but they understand that they can't go so far out of step with where their people are, because that makes those regimes on shaky ground as well. And I think that Trump is going to discover that no amount of money in the world is going to convince these governments to essentially risk committing suicide. And whether he might be able to convince them to take on a small symbolic number, a few thousand here and there, just so Trump can brag and pretend that his plan worked in some way, I don't know about that. But certainly the plot of complete and total displacement of Palestinians from Gaza is not going to be something that anybody in the region is going to agree to. We understand what this is. We know it's an attempt at destroying Palestine and Palestinian society. Everybody in the region understands that. And it's not going to be something that anybody's going to accept or stand by and watch happen.
So, Omar, could you say finally, what do you think the impact of this is going to be on the ceasefire, which so far is holding?
Yeah, I worry deeply about that ceasefire because Trump's tone has changed significantly on it. He came in talking about the importance of the ceasefire, threatening to unleash hell if it were not to come about. And now he's saying he has no confidence that the ceasefire is going to hold. And judging by the glee on Netanyahu's face, it seems clear that Netanyahu is about to be given a free hand to continue the slaughter in Gaza in order to, quote unquote, complete and achieve the aims of the war. And by the way, the aims of the war are not achievable. The forcible retrieval of hostages through violence has actually killed infinitely more hostages than it has rescued. And the alternative of also defeating Hamas is also a non-starter. The real aim of that war is something Netanyahu said early on in a private conversation that was reported in Israeli press, which is to thin the population in Gaza down to a minimum. That is the real aim, and that is precisely what Netanyahu hopes to continue doing in order to get rid of what Israel views racistly as a demographic problem. The fact that there are too many Palestinians who exist on the land that Israel wants. That's always been the problem because it gets in the way of establishing this Jewish supremacist state. It makes it a permanent apartheid state to have a Palestinian majority, and that is precisely what Israel is fighting tooth and nail to undo, and no matter what the cost is to the lives of literally tens of thousands of children killed so far and possibly millions impacted if this project continues.
Omar Badar, I want to thank you for being with us, Palestinian-American political analyst, member of the National Policy Council of the Arab American Institute, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Peter Beinart, author of the new book, Being Jewish After the Destruction of Gaza, A Reckoning. Stay with us. Ensemble featuring Yassine Bey. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman with Nermin Sheikh.
To talk more about Trump's call for the United States to seize Gaza and force out the entire Palestinian population, we're joined here in New York by Peter Beinart, editor-at-large of Jewish Currents and professor of journalism and political science at City University of New York. He's the author of the new book just out titled Being Jewish After the Destruction of Gaza, A Reckoning. Welcome back to the program, Peter, and congratulations on your book, which we'll turn to in a moment. But if we could first get you to respond to you know, the remarks that Trump made a couple of days ago, astonishing remarks about basically the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, turning it into the Riviera of the Middle East, and so on. If you could respond.
I mean, what we're seeing really is, at a macro level, is the question of whether you can do in the 21st century what you could do in the 19th century, which is to basically destroy entire populations of people because you view them as subhuman. Donald Trump views Palestinians as subhuman, and therefore wants to oversee a mass ethnic cleansing, which would be one of the greatest crimes of this century. And all across Washington, you hear people essentially shrug, or people say, maybe it's impractical. I don't care. The question is not whether it's impractical. The question is whether we should be thinking about how we get Donald Trump in front of the International Criminal Court as a war criminal. This is one of the most monstrous things an American president has said in our time. And the fact that it can be assimilated like this is just testament to the profound dehumanization of Palestinians that suffuses American public discourse.
I have a question for you. Diana Bhutu, the well-known Palestinian attorney, when asked about this, I mean, hours after President Trump made this announcement, talking about the demolition site that is Gaza, she said she agreed it's a demolition site. And about moving Palestinians, she said, well, the first point would be moving them back to their homes. Can you give us the history that even you really had no sense of until you began to really study what was going on outside your Jewish education?
Sure. I was raised in a family where Israel was central and where we thought about Israel in terms of what it meant for Jewish safety, a state for Jews where Jews could be safe after the Holocaust. And that was a source of great psychological security, especially for my grandmother, for older people in my generation who themselves had experienced a lot of trauma in their lives. I'm embarrassed to say it was really not until my 30s when I went to spend time with Palestinians in the West Bank that I began to really face what Israel and Zionism had meant for Palestinians. And you're exactly right. Every American media discussion of Gaza should start with the fact that people in Gaza, most of them, are not from Gaza. They are people who are from families that were forcibly expelled from what is now Israel. Many of them can see the lands from which their parents and grandparents were expelled from Gaza.